From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to ARRL, The Doctor Is In podcast. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hey, Joel, it's time to talk about balance. Or, if you listen to 40 Meter Phone, balance. I got my balin. Clarify that. Do you know the correct pronunciation? It is balin, right?
Well, it is a contraction of balanced to unbalanced. So, bal. Un.
So it's not balin.
Not to me, I guess. Well, it depends. How would you say balanced?
Yeah, I wouldn't say...
Balanced?
Balanced. Well, depending on what part of the country you're
maybe
from.
Maybe so. I guess if you would say balanced, then it should be a balin. But if you say balanced, as I would, it should be balin, I would think.
Define for me. Let's define our terms. What is a balin?
A balin, by definition, is the transition between a balanced electrical system and an unbalanced electrical system. So now the next question should be, so what are they?
Yeah, exactly. don't leave us hanging here, Joel.
Okay. So a balanced electrical system, typified by perhaps the connections at the center of a center-fed dipole, is a system in which each side is the same potential above ground. Now, of course, they're not exactly the same. That one is going positive when the other is going negative, but they're both above ground. So at some instant, if one is at plus 100 volts, the other one is at minus 100 volts with respect to ground. So they both are at the same potential with respect to ground, same magnitude of potential. An unbalanced system is one in which one side of the system is at ground potential, and the signal is applied with reference to ground. So an example of something like that would be a ground plane antenna, in which the one side of it is an artificial ground. That would be hooked directly to the shield of a coax, let's say. And the other side is the, let's say, quarter wave monopole that gets connected to the center conductor of the coax.
Or, as you say, monopole, but a vertical antenna. I mean, an HF vertical is an unbalanced antenna by that definition then, right?
HF vertical that's fed on the end, yes. Now, first of all, let's say people say, do you really need a balun? Well, you know, I guess I go back to the 50s starting in this business, and as a young lad, I'd like to say I started when I was two, but it's not really true.
Now, that was before they invented balance.
Well, they didn't call them that. I mean, that's the point. I guess before the World War II, almost all ham antennas were balanced and fed with balanced transmission lines, such as open wire line, and people didn't really have much in the way of pre-manufactured transmission lines. There was no TV yet to speak of that had Twinly. There may have been a little around, but hams didn't tend to use that. And those balanced antenna systems would be connected to a balanced link in a link-coupled transmitter, which would be a kind of an adjustable impedance transformer that would tie into the transmitter output. And there was no need to worry about this, and nobody did. They worried about how well the system was balanced, and they looked at that by putting an RF ammeter in each of the two sides of the balanced line. Yes. And if everything were perfectly balanced, you hit the key, the meters would show the same reading. So that was then. Now, what happened was a confluence of a couple things. The end of World War II and millions of miles, it seemed, of surplus RG8 coax on Cortlandt Street in New York and probably at Radio Rows in many other cities, combined with the beginnings of TV operation, in which hams were finding themselves dealing with TV interference. Coaxial cable, by its nature, if operated properly, has shielding properties, which means that it will not couple to television antennas that it goes nearby. So there was a big push in the late 40s, early 50s to shield equipment, use shielded cables for everything, use coax cable for your antenna feeds. And people did that and just essentially replaced the open wire line with coax.
That's right.
And they hooked the coax to their dipoles. They found that, well, a half-wave dipole connected with coax worked pretty well. People weren't measuring SWR yet, so they didn't know they had a problem, and everybody was happy.
Ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance can be bliss. and nobody had balance. After a while, people started noticing that some people had better results than others. Some people had more coupling from the coax to other systems than others. And what was happening was when you hook the coax to the antenna, you have an interesting phenomenon that takes place. Coaxial cable we think of as a two-conductor system, but really it's a three-conductor system. The coaxial mode, or what's called differential mode, exists between the outside of the inner conductor and the inside of the outer conductor. Remember, there's this thing called skin effect in electric. So with high-frequency currents tend to propagate on the outside surfaces of conductors. So within the coax cable, fields are set up between the inner conductor and the inside of the outer conductor, and they propagate down the coaxial cable. And if it's terminated properly, there's nothing on the outside of the coax because the shielding and the skin effect keeps it that way, and that's what makes shielding work.
Yes.
Now, okay, let's move to the end where the antenna is. Now, we go to our dipole antenna. We hook the inner conductor to one side of the dipole, as we did back then. We hook the coax shield to the other side of the dipole, and what happens? Well, we drive the current towards that load, but it isn't just a single dipole. What we have is we've also inadvertently connected the outside of the shield, which is completely independent of the inside of the shield. We've connected that to the other side of the dipole in parallel with the inside of the shield.
See, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, well, it's nobody did for a long time. But what happens is the current going towards the, call it shield side of the dipole, divides between the half of the dipole and the outside of the shield and comes down the outside of the shield. So no matter how good a job the shield was doing at trying to shield things, it's completely circumvented by any current that flows on the outside of the shield.
Oh, okay.
And that's what's usually referred to as a common mode current, because it's kind of common to the whole shield, in effect, is the whole coax is being sees this current. So that current actually acts like part of the antenna, or radiates as if the current on an antenna does.
Yes.
And is that good or bad? Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes having conductors radiate is a good idea. If your dipole has a null in one direction, this current on the vertical hanging coax might fill in that gap for you, which would be really great. On the other hand, it also keeps coming all the way into the station.
All the way to the radio, yes.
And in the process of doing that, it not only transmits, but it also receives the same way, so that if you're going past the washing machine through the basement or something, now you'll hear the washing machine much more significantly than you would if the shielding were working properly.
Noise pickup.
Yes, exactly. Oh, okay. And not only that, as you will do, as I have been known to do, and that's reset all the buttons on the kitchen radio or interfere with anything else that's going on.
So will the balun save us?
Well, what the balun does is it forces the current to stay on the balanced side and does not allow it, provides a high impedance to current coming back, trying to go on the outside of the shield. So if you picture these three wires up there, you've just, in essence, put a very high impedance in series with the outside of the shield, forcing the current to stay in the dipole. So now the current doesn't divide anymore. It's on the dipole, and there's nothing coming down the outside of the shield. Of course, nothing is kind of the optimum case. Nothing has an infinite impedance, and nothing works perfectly. And, of course, this can be circumvented in other ways. For example, if the coax, the usual approach to using coax or any transmission line is to have it perpendicular to the antenna so that the fields kind of cancel when they reach it. If the coax is moved to one side of the antenna so it's not hanging 90 degrees, it will couple to the antenna. You'll have pickup on the shield from the antenna just through space, and that can cause similar kinds of problems, although usually they're not as strong as the fields that are, or the current that results from a direct connection at the antenna. Now, one thing that's interesting about this is you'll talk to people and they say, oh, I've been using coax-fed dipoles for years. I've never had a problem.
Right.
And somebody else says, oh, it's been a terrible problem for me. It's possible the reason for this is the current that's on the outside of the shield from a direct connection to a dipole, let's say, is a function of the impedance of the shield as seen at the antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that impedance? Well, typically when the coax gets down towards the station, at some point it gets grounded. And we now have a situation where the impedance, if it's grounded well, the impedance at the bottom where it's grounded is, let's say, close to 0 ohms, and it's sort of acting like an antenna. So it's if it's a quarter wave long, the impedance at the other end will be a high impedance. So we had 0 at one end, quarter wave away, mm-hmm. it's a high impedance. So now when the current divides at the dipole, it sees a high impedance looking down the shield, outside of the shield, a low impedance, relatively speaking, at the uh-huh. other half of the dipole, and most of it will go to the dipole, and it'll work great.
Yes.
Nobody needs a balun.
Yes.
Well, what you've really done is you've made the coax transmission line act like a kind of balun or a choke.
That's right, yes.
Now, that's fine if you can plan that very well and you know exactly how long it's going to be, but the real problem comes up, even if you did that, if you're using a multi-band antenna, if it's a quarter wavelength on one band, it's probably a half wave on the other, and that will make it a low impedance at the top, and that'll force current down the shield of the coax. So it's almost impossible to make that happen on multiple bands unless you're very lucky or very clever, or pick your bands, or ship your bands carefully.
Yes.
So we used that the term balun, and it's important to know that there's another term that's often used for a similar function, and that's a common mode choke.
Yes.
And what a common mode choke is, just a device that inserts a high impedance in the shield without doing anything else. And that has some advantages because it's simple frequently and it doesn't require any fancy equipment. Typically, it can be made with the coax cable that's going to the antenna just wound on a ferrite rod or with ferrite beads over the coax cable or with a coax wrapped around a toroid, for example. You can get a high impedance on the shield without affecting what's going on inside the coax, and mm-hmm. that provides the same function. So one thing about that is the common mode choke of that sort is a one-to-one device. It's typically made of the same coax that you use, which has an advantage, by the way, because that doesn't mean you. That means you avoid some connections where you could have trouble otherwise. And further, the balun, on the other hand, has balun designs which can do impedance transformation at the same time, which is, can be
yes.
handy.
Yes. I was going to get to that, you know, yeah. the difference between a 4-to-1 balun, a 1-to-1,
right.
a 9-to-1,
yeah.
and so on.
These are essentially transmission line transformers wound with short sections of transmission lines interconnected in a way to give you that impedance transformation in that little box. And that can be very handy if you have a Yagi antenna that is center-fed that has a very low impedance, such as 20, 25 ohms,
mm-hmm.
a 1-to-2 balun transformation ratio will provide a good match to 50-ohm coax. Or alternately, if you have a rhombic that has a 600-ohm impedance, a 12-to-1 transformer with 12 on the balanced side and 1 on the mm-hmm. unbalanced side will give you a match to 600 ohms, 600 to 50 ohms. So balans can be useful to transform impedances as well, whereas common mode chokes, at least any that I've encountered, are strictly a matter of acting as a 1-to-1.
That's right.
Get the current off the outside of the shield kind of thing. But they're simple and easy to make.
Well, you know, you probably don't remember this, but just a second ago, by the way, when you were talking about coiling up coax to make a common mode choke, a few years ago, I was playing with a 10-meter dipole that was made from two telescopic whip antennas. And I was running into an unusual situation where when I had my antenna analyzer and I was standing just beneath the dipole and I was measuring the SWR, it looked great. It was 1.2 to 1. Connected up the coax back to my radio. When I got back there, the SWR was almost 3 to 1. And it drove me nuts trying to figure out what in the world was going on. And you recommended that I make a common mode choke by taking the coax near the dipole, near the center-fed feed point of the dipole, and coiling it. I believe you recommended 6 turns with a diameter of 6 to 8 inches, if I remember, something like that. And this happened to be RG58 coax, so it worked well. And I did that. I coiled it up, and by golly, that worked. Suddenly, I had the same SWR at the dipole that I was seeing back at the radio.
That's a very common experience, and it's one of the issues with having current on the outside of the shield. It tends to interfere with making accurate standing wave ratio measurements, and a lot of people go crazy with that. And it also, you can sometimes tell if you have that kind of a problem if you look at the standing wave ratio that you're reading and you run your hand along the coax.
Mm-hmm.
If if it changes the SWR, that means something's happening on the outside of the coax, and that means the coax is not working the way you think it is. Something else is going on here, because if the coax is working properly, it should know nothing what's going on outside it.
That's right.
As Colonel Funk would say.
So what is the answer, Joel? You know, when somebody asks, do I need a ballon?
The answer is, as usually the case, it depends.
It depends, of
but
course.
But the other side of it is, having a ballon or a common mode choke will never hurt, and it will almost always help. And if you have a multiband antenna, I guarantee you, you will need a choking mechanism on some bands, if not all mm-hmm. bands. And oh, by the way, you know, it may work fine now, but then I say, oh, I'm going to move my entrance point over here to this other window. Well, you change the length of the transmission line, and it no longer works the same way. And that's one of the nice things about having the coax cable working as coax cable. If it is working properly, it's not particularly sensitive to length.
No.
And I've seen people talk about, you always have to have a half wavelength of coax or something.
Oh, I've heard that too. Yeah.
And that's really not true. It may be because of having a high common mode current that length of coax happens to work for you in some strange way that has nothing to do with the coaxial mode that you're trying to achieve. So if you get the currents inside the coax and it's a 50-ohm system, then adding more coax or taking more coax off will only change the attenuation due to the length. It will not change anything else. The system will still operate the same way. It will still be matched just as well as it was, other than a slight change in the attenuation.
Okay, very good.
And hey, by the way, people that want to read about this, and there's actual pictures, which makes it a little easier, I wrote an article which says, the title, for best results, consider a ballon in your antenna system. It was in the January 2013 QST, and it's available on the digital web archive on our website. So you may want to look at that, and it basically covers just what I just talked about, but you actually can see pictures. So if you understand things better when you see them, this will help you get the concept.
Okay, Joel, it's question time.
All right.
Here we go. This is one from Phil and one Yankee Papa Sierra, and he asks, I have a lot of RG8U coaxial segments around. Some have solid polyethylene dielectrics, and some have foam dielectrics. Should I worry about the different velocity factors if I interconnect them to make a single antenna run?
Okay, Phil, well, in most cases, or in many cases, it doesn't matter. You aren't really that concerned about how long it takes the signal to get from your radio to your antenna, since it's traveling at some fraction of the speed of light, and whether it's going 67% or 83% of the fraction of the speed of light, it's going to get to your antenna pretty quickly, much more quickly than it will get to the station at the far end. So they won't notice the difference. But it does make a difference if you have antennas in which the phase of multiple elements that are interconnected by coax is important. This would be, let's say you had stacked Yagis, and typically with stacked Yagis, you want to feed the driven elements in the same phase so that the signal goes in the direction the Yagis are pointed. If you use the same length of coax to each, and one of them is foam and one of them is solid poly, the phase will be different, and you'll actually end up steering the signal not in the axis of the Yagis, but either up or down from that, which probably is not what you want to have happen. So you may inadvertently change your long-range 2-meter multi-element Yagi from a weak signal long-distance mode into a satellite antenna without realizing it. And people have done this. Similarly, if you're making a four-square antenna that has a requirement of each of the four corners having a particular phase, it's important that you take into account the relative velocity of the signal getting to each of the elements so they come out in the same phase and the lobes go where you think they will. And it's a little tricky because from an instrumentation point of view, unless you're actually measuring the phase, it's very difficult to know you have a problem, and the antenna will not work as well as you thought. So for a straight run of coax going from one place to one transmitter to one antenna, the velocity of propagation doesn't make any difference. As long as they're all the same characteristic impedance, the system will look the way it's supposed to. It'll work the way it's supposed to. And the foam dielectric will have the benefit of having a little less loss. The only other thing you have to watch out for with foam dielectric coax is it has a less forgiving turns radius requirement. If you do tight turns, as for example around a toroid core, you can have the center conductor actually migrate through the foam dielectric to the point where it shorts out. So you have to be careful of that. So it's important in a couple of ways. But for your particular case of going from a radio to an antenna, if it's not bent too much, it'll work just fine.
Excellent. Thank you, Doctor.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.